Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airways, practice number 6, the Gross Misconduct podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend, former big league pitcher, Kip Gross. He's in Newport, California. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, down the road in Woodland Hills, 347-205-9631. 15 minutes goes by quick. Catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I lay that red carpet down, put that podium in its place, hand off the mic. Kip, how are you this afternoon, my friend?
I'm doing great. I just got out of an appointment for a doctor for my neck and my arm, a little sore, so he took care of it and made me feel better, and a little pain to make it feel better, kind of how it works. But no, I'm doing good. Newport right now is a little overcast, but it's always nice here. You know that.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And, you know, talking about backs and all that, necks and stuff, man, oh, man, I had found a great guy one time that laid me on a board. It was almost like a straitjacket. He separated the L4, L5 from the nerve, and, man, I was good as new because – before that, I was crawling around, and in acupuncture didn't really work and anything. But, man, oh, man, I said to myself, this guy was a savior. So, yeah, I know that feeling all too well. Hey, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you, because I know they would.
KipGross.com. And you go on there, just leave me a message, whatever you want to do, and I'll respond to you ASAP. That's what I do.
Well, I'll tell you this. You played, and I tell this to everybody, it's one of the best things, accomplishments in life, playing Major League Baseball for more than a cup of coffee, and you played for quite a few organizations. Let's start out with the managers you played with and how instrumental they were in your career and moving forward, or if it was a little bit of a setback to some extent. We'll start out with Cincinnati.
Yeah, I had obviously Lou Piniella there, and he was his first year manager in Cincinnati, and he just came over from the Yankees, I believe. And it was really, really cool because day one in spring training, he had a meeting with everybody, and it was a really, really good meeting because he kind of walked around the room looking at everybody, and he was actually giving Pete Rose a lot of credit for what was in the room and who was in the room and how things had progressed over the years. So that was kind of a cool thing. But Lou, I really, really loved Lou. And I'll tell you the reason was because Lou told you now. He didn't wait until next day at practice or pregame or after the game. He told you right now in the dugout as it happened your flaws or whatever to make you better. You know, and you think about it, what if you got next inning, same thing happens. He didn't tell you the last inning, it probably wouldn't happen the next inning. So he was good about that. He also, one other thing Lou I really liked about, he didn't always send signs to the third base coach to give to the runners and stuff. He would just walk over to the guy at first base in the dugout and say, hey, Barry, steal on the next pitch. And the first base coach, the first baseman would look over like, what? No, come on. And so now everybody's a little tensed up, and sure as hell, they steal second base, no problem. He did that kind of stuff a lot. And I really liked Lou. I really did. He was a hands-on guy. I'm sure everybody remembers the little scuffle in the clubhouse with Rob Dibble. And I was right there for that. In fact, I was right next to the camera when that was going on. And it was just one of those things that, you know, it stuff happens over time, you know, and you got 25, 30 guys in a clubhouse, you know, for 7.5 months. Tempers player once in a while and things happen. But, yeah, I absolutely love Lou.
Right. And not only that, when you look at it, you know, from afar and looking at him, maybe as a media guy covering and stuff, he just seemed to be a guy that would have your back. He'd be out there. If something wasn't right, he'd be in the middle of it, sticking up for his troops and everything. And you're right, 7.5 months, 8 months, 200 games if you're counting spring training and all this, getting acclimated with each other back again in February, pitchers and catchers, and then going through if you go to October. That's a long time, and a lot of people don't realize it. And then when you have an uprising or something, they're all standing there wondering why. But then you got to put up with all the other media guys that, you know, give you a hard time or ask you the same question 20 different ways.
No doubt about it. Yeah. You know, Lou is just the guy. Like you're saying, he was a player's manager. He stuck up for his players. And one thing Lou really liked out of his players was fire. You know, he liked guys who got pissed off once in a while if they didn't do well. You know, he'd come in and throw their glove or break a bat. Or, you know, I mean, you saw Lou on the field. Hell, he took the face out, threw him hats, and he liked that kind of player. And, you know, there was a few guys like, I don't want to really bring it up, but I will. Paul O'Neill, he was kind of a fake fire guy. You know, he wanted to, couldn't. And there was one day when it was kind of funny because something happened. I don't remember what the umpire or whatever. He goes over and he wanted to throw that bucket of balls out on the field so bad, but he just kind of tipped it over and the balls rolled out. And Lou loved fire. He loved passion. And I mean, that's how he played the game too. So that kind of goes without saying.
Yeah. Then on L.A., Hollywood actors, Tommy Lasorda. And, boy, I'll tell you, you know, you kind of felt like it wasn't New York. It had to be L.A. where center stage with all this, and Tommy right in the middle of it, it seemed like.
Yeah, Tommy, most people don't know this about me and Tommy. Me and Tommy didn't get along very well. And it was basically because I was always my own guy. You know, I didn't sit and try to please the manager just because you're the manager. I was trying to please my teammates because I want to be a good teammate. And back then I had longer hair, and I was one of the guys that had longer hair on the team. And he used to come to me all the time, said, go get your hair cut. And I would just, you know, I'd like, no, I'm not getting my hair cut, Tommy. I'm not doing it. You know, I used to use the sweat behind on my neck, you know, when I pitched.
Yeah.
On my face. But Tommy was more of the Hollywood guy. People really don't know that behind the scenes, Tommy was a lot different behind the scenes than he was behind the camera. And for that, one of the reasons why him and I just didn't get along, because, you know, I've always been a real guy, no matter what's going on. And, you know, I grew up in my hometown of Gearing, Nebraska, small town where everybody's their selves. And Tommy is a little different behind the scenes, and he—I shouldn't say a little—he was a lot different behind the scenes than he was behind the camera. And he was in Hollywood, and you know, everybody loved Tommy, or loved Tommy, I should say. But him and I didn't get along too well half the time, but it was okay.
Yeah, well, and not only that, you know, everybody has the right to do what they want. I mean, we're not in New York where we're shaving mustaches and everything. It's L.A., and you know, a lot of guys would have the hair out. And wear it long, or, you know, do what they want. But to stand out there and signal guys to get your hair cut, I think, come on, I could put it in a bun. Nobody's going to see it under the hat, whatever. But, yeah, everybody's trying to change somebody and just accept them for what they are. He's going out there every 5 days and giving you, you know, close to 9 innings, if not 9 innings. Leave him alone and he'll see you in the next 5 days.
I mean, he was a good guy too. Don't get me wrong. He stuck up for his players too. But at the same time, he would, you know, he'd speak his mind too. He really would. And you know, I give him credit for everything he did in baseball. Obviously, you know, he's an icon and one of the, you know, biggest names ever to be a manager in baseball. But you know, one thing Tommy did really, really well though is he worked with the rookies. He always liked throwing batting practice to the rookies, and he used to have this left-handed curveball. So he'd go out there and he'd throw curveball after curveball pre-batting practice to all the rookies, and because he wanted them to hit curveballs, that's what he wanted. You know, hit it. But Tommy never had a problem praising himself, so I can tell you that.
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in Philadelphia or New York when he went into some of those cities with the authentic Italian food.
Oh, yeah. But I'll tell you one other thing Tommy never did. He never paid for a meal in his life. I can tell you that. I got a lot of stories about Tommy and some different things that happened over the years. So as we keep going through these podcasts, I'll start throwing some of those stories
out. Oh, man. Yeah.
People might be a little shocked.
Finish it. People will be a little shocked. But, you know, hey, the truth speaks for itself.
Yeah, I've got some good stories with Tommy and the camera and different things like that. So over time, we'll get to some of these, and they'll be good.
Hey, yeah. 5 minutes goes by quick, and this shit's a thing. We might have to extend this a little into the debut of next week, but, you know, we have Japan on the thing where you had a great manager out there, Boston and Houston. Where do you want to go? You want to go Japan? You want to go Boston? You want to go Houston? And whatever we don't finish, we'll take into next week.
Well, you know, I had several managers in Japan, and, you know, be honest with you, I can't even remember all their names over there because, you know, it was the Japanese names, and I should remember them all. But my first manager over in Japan, he was a Hollywood guy, too. He used to he had his own CDs out. He was a singer in Japan.
Wow.
And so the whole thing was really kind of crazy over there because my, at that time, girlfriend, next time wife, came over. And they didn't really like her being at the team because in Japan it's work first, family second. And so the first time, when she finally came over, we were supposed to go on like a 15-day road trip. And so, you know, the interpreters are coming over to me, trying to get my room all set up and whatever. And I said, so how does this work? How's Jamie do all this stuff and go on the road? And they said, Jamie's not going on the road. And I said, well, yeah, she's going on. She's never been out of Nebraska, much less being in Tokyo, Japan now.
Right, right.
So we went back and forth with the manager for probably an hour with the interpreter and myself, and they finally gave in. And because I told them, I said, hey, you know what? If she can't go, just get my plane ticket home. I'm out of here. I can't do this. And so
yeah.
You know, I there was a lot of things in Japan I changed over time with my wife over there because they, like I said, their first is work over there. Family is second. And so some of the things the Japanese do is just completely different from over here. But I will tell you this about my first manager in Japan. It was actually my first appearance in Japan. I'm on the mound. I came in relief because they signed me as a closer over there, believe it or not. And we just didn't have any games to close because our team wasn't very good. But the first game I'm in, there was a call at first base, and a manager didn't like it at all. Ueda was his name. And so the manager goes out there to argue. And next thing you know, my manager is kicking this umpire in the shin, just repeatedly, doo, 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 with his foot. Look around like, where am I at right now? But, it ended up being great over there. I had a couple good managers, and they, you know, one of my last manager over there, he ended up having some problems with his family, and so the press really got on him because he was paying more attention to his family than he was the team. But as I said, it was a different thing over there. The managers run the show in Japan, completely run the show. If they want this, you get it. If they don't want that, they don't get it. It's just they run the show, not the GMs over there at all. So it was a different world, different baseball, but I got along with everybody over there. I really did.
Well, you know what I like about you? You're authentic, you're genuine, you beat to your own drum, and you stand firm in what you believe in, and that's all the qualities I like, and I run that same thing, And people just can't understand it. They try to change the things, just accept what's being given, and they just that's where the problems start because they try to change instead of just trying to adapt. And man, as we run out of this great show down to a minute, I know we'll continue in the debut with the Boston and Houston ones and some more of these stories. And just to let these listeners know that boy, we got a lot planned for you. A lot of great topics. We're going to get into everything. We're covering a lot of stuff, and that's what we give you an inside edge of what's going on, and we'll have some guests here too. So, you know, it's bringing the guys that laid the foundation for what's going on even in today's game to the forefront, not forgetting them. Kip, I appreciate you tremendously. You're a brother, a mentor, and a friend. Let everybody know how they can get a hold of you, and, boy, I'm excited for next week.
Again, kipgross.com website. It's actually where my book is pre-ordered there. Figure it out. So yeah, get on the website and thing you want with me, I'll definitely respond. And I'm enjoying this immensely with you, Mark.
I always like it. It's the Gross Misconduct Podcast. Break the rules, raise the ratings, man. That's what we're all about. as we stand here and take this up to new levels. I'm going to get his son on here. I want to talk to his son about, you know, what he's doing. We'll get the, you know, what you're teaching the kids. Boy, there's so many things to talk about. Guys, we really appreciate you listening. This is the end of the practices, practice number 6. We'll debut the show next Tuesday. That's June 20th. Coming in at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock if you're in the Windy City. Till then, catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast Platforms. Wherever you subscribe to podcasts powered now by Mancini Media. Kip, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. I can't wait to get this thing rolling next Tuesday.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. Let's get this rocking and rolling and have some fun. That's what we should do with everything, right?
Yep, 60 feet, 6 inches. He'll be throwing them, and I'll be catching them. Till then, have a blessed one, guys. Stay tuned for Peter Ray's great show out of Cleveland coming up at the top of the hour. Till then, thanks for listening in.